Artificial intelligence, and let's say specifically machine learning, is certainly a data-driven problem. And of course, it makes EUMETSAT at the heart of this problem because we are providing a lot of data. And so this is becoming a strong link. And the question we have is, could we better, further exploit the amount of data we provide to our users and members?
Hello and welcome to this edition of Watching the Earth, a podcast where we at EUMETSAT share how Earth observation is making the world a safer and more sustainable place for us all. I'm Dr. Hayley Evers-King, your host today. I'm a marine applications expert here at EUMETSAT, and I'm joined today by our EUMETSAT chief scientist, Dr. Paolo Ruti. Hi, Paolo.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
So today's topic is definitely a hot one, something that everybody is talking about at the moment in some way or another. We're going to be talking about artificial intelligence and machine learning. And depending on who you listen to, AI is something that's either going to doom us or save us. Some people consider it completely useless and some people consider it super useful. But one thing we can't really do at the moment is ignore this topic and its growing role that it's playing in all of our lives. And EUMETSAT is, of course, no exception to this. So, Paolo, tell me, why does artificial intelligence interest you as our chief scientist? How is it relevant to the community that we serve?
Artificial intelligence, let's say specifically machine learning, is certainly a data-driven problem. Artificial intelligence even broader, and you can link back or track down back to the Greek, the first they tried to reconstruct artificially or theoretically a body, so to have a first type of robot. But if you move down to machine learning, which is a data-driven, of course it makes EUMETSAT at the heart of this problem because we are providing a lot of data. And so this is becoming a strong link. And the question we have is, could we better, further exploit the amount of data we provide to our users and members?
So there's the users, the members that you talk of, most of these in terms of our EUMETSAT mandate are the weather community. What sort of use do we see at the moment for AI and machine learning in the weather community at large?
That's a very important question today, because let's say you would have asked this question one year ago. Probably the answer would have been not only from myself, but from many other experts in the sector. Oh, AI machine learning, certainly there's a strong potential of applications. We will see a lot in few year times. But today, the answer is we already seen. Less than 10 months ago, the research side of big techs in the world, they published paper and demonstrated that machine learning methods can be as good as ECNWF model in predicting weather for tomorrow and for the next 10 days, or in some conditions, even better. And on top of that, the computational consumption is much less, so it's a huge factor less. Of course, you need to take into account the learning period, and this is changing. But if you start today and you already have a trained machine learning model, you get a lot of less computing power you will need.
So maybe for our users who aren't so familiar with what really goes on behind the scenes in the forecasting world, how does a AI or machine learning based approach to forecasting differ from maybe what we've done traditionally?
Just to make a long story short, what we do traditionally is we use our data observation from satellite, aviation, any other type of observation, and we concentrate in time windows of 6 hours. In that time windows, we use the best way to approximate the atmosphere, which is what we call a reduced Navier-Stokes model. So it's a bit of fluid dynamics, a bit of physics, fundamental principles, and we have a best fit between our observation and what is the first guess of the model. And we have this as an initial condition. And then the model is used to forecast the next 10 days. You can construct a long time series of initial conditions. And what happened in the recent months is that machine learning methods trained, so complex neural network structure have been trained by this analysis, this long time series of analysis for 30 years. And they've been trained in a way that they were mimicking, but in a very nice way, the full model. And so those methods now, they can substitute the model using much less computational power.
So there's a real benefit there to using a lot less computation. Are there other benefits that machine learning and AI can offer to the community in the ways that we work with and understand the data that UMetSat provides, for example?
That is an open question, I would say. ECNWF is on top of this work at the European level, and they are running parallelly some of those machine learning models, and they try to better understand what could be the wide spectrum of applications. It is an open question because the process to fit into a time window of 6 hours through a mathematics which is called data simulation, if that process will be further advanced by neural networks or machine learning, that could probably try to answer the biggest question, which is, could we further exploit our data? At the moment, we know that a small percentage of satellite data are used into the data simulation system. And this, I would say, is still an open question, but I'm sure that in the next 12 months, we will learn something.
It really sounds like everything is changing super rapidly, which is, you know, very exciting, but also, I guess, comes with a lot of challenges. What would you say are the major challenges for users of our data who want to work with AI and machine learning? What sort of challenges are they facing?
First of all, I mean, from a UMetSat perspective, everything can be tracked down to a short statement: data curation. So how we prepare the data to be AI or machine learning ready? Because that's the first big problem, is the first big barrier. So the fact that you have data in a disk does not is not enough. You need to make sure that those data, they are in a proper grid, there are not gaps there, or they are labeled. You need to make sure that you have a different type of data coming together, severe data together with radar data. In the future will be MTG, because you need a certain long time series. So this is why I mentioned severe and not MTG, because we still need to pile up. So this is a lot of work and a lot of investment that is usually considered a given, which is not. So, and this is, I think, is the biggest barrier, and where UMetSat can make a difference respect to what the member states they need.
So we talked just a minute ago about forecasting, and you were saying about this kind of 6 hour window and things like that. Do you think that machine learning and AI will also offer input towards longer term forecasts at like the seasonal or climate scales? Of course, you know, weather is one of our main mandates, but so is climate, and climate change is probably the other hot topic on everybody's minds at the moment, especially with the way this last year has been.
You are absolutely right when you said a few seconds ago that things are, the landscape is really changing dramatically in few months, basically. So few months ago, we were at WMO for a workshop during the WMO Congress, and NVIDIA was there and presenting their new advancement, and seasonal prediction and climate models were on top of their new, let's say, to have a general type of neural network model that is so generic, trained in a general way, to become used also for seasonal prediction and maybe also climate application in the near future. So the answer is absolutely yes. And this is also what ECNWF is trying to follow on in recent weeks, so I would say.
How do you think the average person might see the benefits of this? I mean, of course, an improved weather forecast is going to be great. We know that, you know, improved weather forecasts make all our lives easier in various ways. But are there ways that you think AI and machine learning will create some new innovations that maybe link data together in different ways, or link the forecast more with downstream impacts on people that might help us?
Let's say, looking to what UMetSat does, and also in collaboration with the ECNWF and the member states, I think there's, we should say, first of all, the prediction models, the traditional prediction models, let's call them, they are very good.
Mm-hmm. Better in recent years as well, substantially, right? So I'm always amazed by that.
This is an asset. What will make a difference in this machine learning world is that you can run those models, you can have the similar skill with the few GPUs, so which opened the market to many other applications or to many other company to run dedicated or specific type of weather prediction models. Our community is extremely interested to now casting as well. So the next few hours, 2-3 hours prediction. Usually the traditional method was using radar data because radars are capable to detect and to scout all the clouds and to detect precipitation. So you can actually create a sort of a linear type of model following clouds and precipitation lines. Our fellowship, EUMETSAT fellowship in Switzerland and in Austria, they already demonstrated that machine learning methods can be much better in predicting the next 2-3 hours. And this is, you see how different applications are developing, but you see also probably a market outside that could be involved also other private companies. There is another bunch of applications where I would like the people think about is in their day-to-day life. There are many other AI methods or models like large language model. What it is? ChatGPT, chatbot. We know.
We weren't going to get through the podcast without mentioning it, will we?
So this is one area where our today work is already changing and dramatically.
Yeah, I think for me, that kind of intersection with the ways that we understand data is really interesting. You know, you spoke about Navier-Stokes. I'm an oceanographer by training, so I'm familiar with how kind of fluid dynamics works in our different Earth systems. But I think there's things that we can maybe, it's this kind of unknown unknowns idea, I think, with machine learning that's quite interesting. You know, you give data to these models and maybe you make connections that it's hard to see with a traditional kind of physical or mathematical approach. And I think that can open up a lot of opportunity for us to provide new insights or to sift information in new ways, maybe. I really like what you were saying there about, you know, the large language model connection. So for me, this topic seems incredibly diverse and a little bit intimidating. You know, if we're preparing for an AI-based future, there's things you mentioned there about data formats, the way we serve data, the way we interact with our users, the way we label our data. So what are we doing at EUMETSAT to kind of plan for that? Do we have a structure? Can you tell me a bit about that?
We are, first of all, we developed a roadmap with our member states, because the first question we try to answer was how we can be more useful or how we can improve the link with what the member states, the different meteorological services around Europe, from UK down to Turkey, from Poland to Portugal. So, and they are certainly interested to have better data and to provide it in a way that they can explore machine learning methods. Of course, it calls also to work more closely with them, and the nice way to do is through the cloud. So the work we are doing as EUMETSAT to bring the members closer together, to work together into the cloud, it's an essential element here, because cloud will favor collaboration, will favor software tools that can be applied. You open your virtual machine as a group of member states or as a group of Met services, and you will have your suite of applications that they are already AI-oriented. You will have your easy access to the data. Of course, it's not as easy as at the beginning. We will need a lot of work to make this happening, but this is really the target. I think this is one area where it is extremely important what EUMETSAT does. So we have been working with them. We know what they need in terms of this roadmap. So we already discussed prediction, now casting, also how we can improve retrieval from our satellite, or in the future virtual instruments, having much more satellites, much more constellations, how they could come together in an easy way with this fancy word, which is a virtual instrument. All this type of application, but this will not happen without a cloud and a well-managed cloud.
So you mentioned the cloud, and I think the cloud is one of these things that comes up a lot when we talk about AI machine learning, because I think a real strength of these tools is allowing us to work with very large volumes of data, and cloud is something that's essential to that. This paradigm shift that's happening at the moment of we have more and more data and more things we need to do with it. So bringing users to the data rather than sending data to the users becomes ever more important. And I think this is maybe particularly important for UMetasat at the moment with our new missions coming online, Meteosat third generation and our next Polar system as well coming online. Do you think that machine learning and AI are going to be essential to helping us deal with that volume of data alongside the cloud?
Absolutely. I think that will be crucial because the diversity of data instruments we have, it's coming together usually into the data simulation, in the numerical weather prediction ways. But there are many other applications we are working on. You mentioned marine applications. We can think about air quality, hydrology, water management. And there are many applications where, yes, of course, you need models, but you need also the capacity to jump into the impact area. And this is where machine learning, AI, can be extremely powerful, because you can ask yourself a question. You want to know what is the water availability in a mountain region in a certain area of Europe, Switzerland, Austria, Italy. So you have a question, and you can train your models to answer a question. You don't need to go through intermediate steps with creating new variables or new parameters. So it is a powerful instrument. Of course, you need the data to be available and not just to be in a disk, because this is not does not mean that those data are available. So you need to make a bit of work on your side. But certainly, it will open the doors to many other applications we even don't imagine today.
You reminded me just then when you were saying about asking questions, that one of the criticisms I've historically seen levied at like machine learning and artificial intelligence techniques is, oh, it's just a black box. You know, it doesn't teach you anything. But I mean, or the other thing that I think people are concerned about a lot is, oh, it's going to take all our jobs, this kind of thing. But it's clear to me from what you just said there that one of the important things is being able to ask the right questions of your models. And I guess the way you deploy them can answer questions and tell you more about your data than you might otherwise have known. So how do you see this interfacing with maybe the research landscape?
Your question resonates with me. I mean, there's one myth we have to speak about. It's the people usually think about machine learning AI as a sort of odd things, very far from what engineering or physics time to times I see people scared or this is a bit of magic. You throw data into a strange layers of a cellular automata, what was called many years ago, and then you get an output. I think we need to spend a few seconds on this because it is extremely important. So if you consider phenomena like learning or memory, what we learn from neuroscience is that they emerge from neurons when neurons are connected. And this is one fact. And what machine learning, artificial intelligence does, they reproduce this connectivity and this connection from, of course, trying to simplify some aspects, but to have a sort of macro view of the problem and to try to reproduce this connectivity. And this is studied by a specific field of physics, which is statistical mechanics, that is the one used when you have a gas and you don't want to follow the single molecule of the gas and to give a velocity or initial condition of that molecule, because the number of molecules is too high, so you cannot. So you have to interpret all these through making assumption and to construct mathematics, and through this mathematics answering the question, what is the temperature of that gas? The same way, there is a strong relationship between neural networks and statistical mechanics. And actually, 2 years ago, the Nobel Prize in Physics was one Italian guy, Giorgio Parisi, was working very close between these two fields. So I think we need to break this myth that is a strange magic behind neural networks. I think this is the first...
It sounds like it's really not an either or, right? It's not machine learning or, you know, like process-based understanding. It's a tool that we can use to in various ways to help our understanding. We've spoken about how we're doing things here at UMetSat to help our users outside the building work with our data in machine learning and AI context. But How do you see this sort of revolution in these techniques changing the way, or maybe it is already in some ways changing the way we are working in this building? I know we already use machine learning in some of our satellite-based retrievals, but how do you see it changing the way we work here at EUMETSAT?
Think about the operations. You are in front of your many screens and you see all the telemetry, and you will have an agent or a chatbot when an anomaly happens that already gives you a bit of understanding what's going on, or you are asking a specific question and it will go and look to different combination of the telemetry to give you an answer back. It will guide you. It will help you to sort out what's happening and what is the problem. And this is a sort of first approach in this discussion that could help you. And there's also a strong collaboration in this context between ESA and EUMETSAT on the operation side. But you are sitting, for instance, on the user support, and you want to have a first chatbot that will be the filter between your user and your data. And you will ask a question: I have a problem in my region of water supply, or I have a problem, and which type of data I can use here? Is there anything that can be useful from this massive amount of data? And the connection between all the lakes of layers of data you have and the question could be filled by a large language model connected to a large statistical models. And this probably will become a sort of a potential new tools that industry will offer you. So that's also, it's going very fast, so fast that maybe some of the companies, they are providing softwares around the world, they are already in the next few months or the next year providing some sort of initial step forward.
Yeah, I've done some experiments myself with some of these large language models, and I've played around with ChatGPT, and I actually find it really useful as kind of like a sounding board. You know, it's like you say, it's not, it can't replace a person, but it can act as, you know, something that you interact with, like a very good search engine. It can help you refine your thought processes. It can help you find things more easily that, you know, otherwise you'd have to spend a while sort of massaging. Even with our very good search engines now, you'd have to massage the search terms to get that kind of input back. So I think it is really going to change the way we work. Have you played around with ChatGPT at all?
Yes. And you still now see the difference between what is available free and what you can get available if you pay a subscription. So there's a massive difference. So it means that they are just providing for free probably what they already got 1 year ago. So they are working very fast in connecting different foundational models, pre-trained models in that area. So I found extremely useful for many different, you start having an idea, you want to dig down an area, you can ask and look for literature. So this is a typical sort of agent can help you in day-to-day work. Or of course, I'm not a mother tongue, so you can have a bit of writing stuff, and then you make a chatbot proofreading, and it works very well. So that's basic things. But what we will see in a few months, it will be even even farther. So the connection between different foundational models, so asking a question and receiving back a plot with a code, and not just with an answer, will make the difference.
Actually doing more complex workflows as well. It's really interesting you say about, you know, the difference between the newer and the older models. And I think this really speaks to, I guess, the point we started this conversation with, which was that the data is so crucial to this. Like the training, the way you build these models, whether they're a weather forecasting model or a large scale language model, all depend on what you put into them and the data you can create, input. So the data that we collect at EUMETSAT, I guess, only has even more importance in this kind of future.
That's absolutely the case. It will... data are crucial. The second statement is access to data in an easy way is even more crucial. So those are the two tasks we have as EUMETSAT.
Hey, we're coming towards the end of the podcast, Paolo, but one topic that's come up, and I think it's, you know, kind of a natural place that we're going when we talk about cloud, we talk about AI, is quantum computing. What is it? Tell me about it, because I don't really know anything about it at all.
You toss a coin and until it will not collapse or coming back on your hand, you don't know if it is tails or heads. So this is the easiest way to define a qubit. So it's the smallest computational unit of a quantum computing. So you have the possibility to have more states described by your qubit, and you don't know them until you, of course, your coin will be back to you and you see if it is tail or head. So in some way, this is the most important tricky difference respect to any 0-1 type of algorithm or type of CPU you are used to. And so you can have multi-states represented by those computers. How does it work? It works that you need to have massive amount of qubits to start running algorithms or to build algebra, because before any computer you need to build your circuits or your algebra, because otherwise you will not be able to make any computation at all. And this is the stage where we are. So quantum computing is working on this, and you have a massive work around university and big companies. And this is also a good investment at European level, we should say, compared to ChatGPT, that was absolutely something developed in another context, in another continent, US. So it's because it will open the, it will favor, for instance, many AI application, especially when you have a classification problem or these type of problems. It could be the power behind this qubit is much higher, and it will open a new way to make computation. Is the question to us is how far it is from an operational era, because we are an operational organization, so we invest on science, but we invest on science that is can be used tomorrow. And I would say that still, if you also look to international experts on this, we are still far from an operational use of it. So probably we will still have 5 to 10 years to wait. But the investment is quite huge. And as I said, for the AI machine learning context, a few months ago, many experts in our sector would have said that machine learning was close, but not so close to solve the problem, and we were wrong. So maybe I'm wrong also on quantum computing, and it will happen in a shorter time. But
now maybe you can be both wrong and right at the same time.
Exactly, as a qubit.
Thank you for joining me today, Paolo, and thank you to all our listeners for listening into this edition of Watching the Earth. I'm hoping we're going to have more podcasts on AI in the future, where we'll learn maybe about some different applications as they emerge. It's been really good today to hear about how AI is going to affect the weather forecasting industry, how at UMetSat we're adapting to this and the ways we serve our data to our users, and how we're operating our satellites. Join us next time for more fascinating talk about how we can observe our Earth from space.